Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
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 Purusha
Purusha
Andam
Andam
Vinirbhidya
Vinirbhidya
Yadasau
Yadasau
Sa
Sa
Vinirgata
Vinirgata
Atmano
Atmano
Ayanam
Ayanam
Anvichan
Anvichan
Apo
Apo
Asrakshit Asrakshit Shuchir,
Shuchi,
Purushandam Vinirvidya,
Purushandam Vinirvidya,
Yadasausa Vinirgata,
Yadasausa Vinirgata,
Atmanoyanaman Vichan,
Atmanoyanaman Vichan,
Aposrak Chichichna, Chuchuchuchi,
Aposrak Chichuchi,
Purushandam Vinirvidya,
Purushandam Vinirvidya,
Yadasausa Vinirgata,
Yadasausa Vinirgata,
Atmanoyan Atmanoyanamandichan
Atmanoyanamandichan
Aposrakchichuchichuchi
Aposrakchichuchichuchi
Purushandam Vinirvidya
Purushandam Vinirvidya
Yadasausa Vinirgata
Yadasausa Vinirgata
Yadasa Atmanoyanamandichan
Atmanoyanamandichan
Aposrashchichuchichuchi
Aposrashchichuchichuchi
Purusha
Purusha
The Supreme Person
Paramatma
Andam
Andam
The Universes
Vinirvidya
Vinirvidya Making them each separately situated. Yada,
yada.
When?
When?
Asau,
asau.
The same.
Saha,
saha.
He.
The Lord.
The Lord.
Vinirgata,
vinirgata.
Came out. Atmana,
atmana.
Of himself.
Ayanam,
ayanam. Lying in place.
Lying in place.
Anvichan,
anvichan,
desiring,
desiring.
Apa,
apa,
water,
water.
Astrakshi,
astrakshi,
created,
created.
Suchi,
suchi,
the most pure,
the most pure.
Shuchi,
shuchi,
transcendental,
transcendental.
Translation: After separating the different universes, the gigantic universal form of the Lord, Mahavishnu, which came out of the causal ocean, the place of appearance for the first Purusha avatar, entered into each of the separate universes, desiring to lie on the created transcendental water, Garbhodaya. Purport. After analysis of the living entities and the Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the independent source of all other living beings, Srila Sukadeva Goswami is now presenting the prime necessity for devotional service to the Lord, which is the only occupational business of all living entities. The Supreme Lord Sri Krishna and all his plenary portions and extensions of plenary portions are non-different from each other, and thus the supreme independence is in each and every one of them. In order to prove this, Shukadeva Goswami, as promised to King Parikit, describes herein the independence of the Purusha avatar, personality of Godhead, even in the sphere of the material creation. Such activities of the Lord are also transcendental, and therefore they are also lila, or pastimes of the Absolute Lord. Such pastimes of the Lord are very conducive to the hearers for self-realization in the field of devotional service. Some may argue, why not then relish the transcendental lila of the Lord as exhibited in the land of Mathura and Vrindavan, which are sweeter than anything in the world? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that the pastimes of the Lord in Vrindavan are meant to be relished by advanced devotees of the Lord. Neophyte devotees will misunderstand such supreme transcendental activities of the Lord, and therefore the Lord's pastimes in the material sphere related to creation, maintenance, and destruction are very relishable to the Prakriti, or the mundane devotees of the Lord. As the yoga system mainly based on bodily exercises is meant for the person who is too much attached to the bodily conception of existence, similarly the Lord's pastimes related to the creation and destruction of the material world are for those who are too materially attached. For such mundane creatures, the functions of the body and functions of the cosmic world through physical laws and relationship with the Lord are also therefore included in understanding of the lawmaker, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The scientists explain the material functions by so many technological terms of material law, but such blind scientists forget the lawmaker. The Srimad Bhagavatam points out the lawmaker. One should not be amazed by the mechanical arrangement of the complicated engine or dynamo, but one should praise the engineer who creates such a wonderful working machine. That is the difference between the devotee and the non-devotee. Devotees are always full with praising the Lord, who directs the physical laws. In Bhagavad Gita 9.10, the direction of the Lord upon material nature is described as follows. Mayadhyakchena prakriti suyate sacharacharam hetunane akanteya jagad viparivartate. The material nature full of physical laws is one of my different energies. Therefore, it is neither independent nor blind. Because I am transcendentally all-powerful, simply by my glance over material nature, the physical laws of nature work so wonderfully. The actions and reactions of the physical laws work on that account. And thus, the material world is created, maintained, and annihilated again and again. Men with poor fund of knowledge, however, become astonished by studying the physical laws both within the construction of the individual body and within the cosmic manifestation. And foolishly, they decry the existence of God, taking it for granted that the physical laws are independent without any metaphysical control. The Bhagavad Gita 9.11 replies to this foolishness in the following words. Avachananti mam mudha manushim tanumashritam param bhavam ajananto mama bhuta maheshwaram. The foolish men, mudha, do not know the personality of Godhead in his eternal form of bliss and knowledge. The foolish man thinks of the transcendental body of the Lord as something like his own, and therefore he cannot think of the unlimited controlling power of the Lord, who is not visible in the acting of physical laws. The Lord is, however, visible to the naked eyes of people in general when he descends himself by his own personal potency. Lord Krishna incarnated himself as he is and played very wonderful parts as the Lord himself, and the Bhagavad Gita concerns such wonderful actions and knowledge. Yet foolish men will not accept Lord Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Generally, they consider the infinitesimal and infinite features of the Lord because they themselves are unable to become either infinitesimal or infinite. But one should know that the infinite and infinitesimal sizes of the Lord are not his highest glories. The most wonderful manifestation of the Lord's power is exhibited when the infinite Lord becomes visible to our eyes and is one of us. Yet his activities are different from those of the finite beings. Lifting a mountain at the age of 7 years and marrying 16,000 wives in the prime of his youth are some of the examples of his infinite energy. But the mudas, after seeing them or hearing about them, decry them as legendary and take the Lord as one of them. They cannot understand that the Lord, Sri Krishna, although in the form of a human being by his own potency, is still the Supreme Lord with full potency as the Supreme Controller. When, however, the mudas give submissive and oral reception to the messages of the Lord, as in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, through the channel of disciplic succession, such mudas become devotees of the Lord by the grace of his pure devotees. And for this reason only, either in the Bhagavad Gita or in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the pastimes of the Lord in the material world are delineated for the benefit of those men with a poor fund of knowledge. So here we're trying to establish, because this is the second canto, we're trying to establish the living entity's need to surrender to the Lord. because the living entity wants to be the Lord. This is a problem. And so that has to be convinced that we're not the one that is the Lord. Independence is there in the living entity, but that independence is still interdependent. Right? The example given in the previous verse of the sun and the eyes. Without the sun, the eyes cannot see, but without the eyes, the sun cannot be perceived. So they're interdependent. That means that there's something beyond that. So all these are being established so that we, in all spheres of life, will come to the conclusion that I am not the supreme independent person. And I am dependent. So if one is dependent, that means one has to interact with someone else. And that someone else then becomes actually the shelter. Not that we're the shelter, but they are the shelter. Otherwise, you have the element of this Surigam Sarva Bhutan. The living entity thinks, I am the shelter, I am the friend of everybody. But actually, the Supreme Lord is. So it's a very important point to establish. Means, in theory, it's very easy to understand, but this means it has to be, we must endeavor to try to apply it in our life. It's just like, let us say you're doing something, it doesn't work, you become angry. Why did you become angry? Because you think, we think, we're the independent controller. Otherwise, why would we become angry? Right? We're anger after frustration. That frustration is, I can't control it the way I think I should be able to. The other party got in the way. They were not submissive to my authority. So, we see, if you think about that, how many times in a day do we experience this feeling? So, that's why this is being given here. Because we need to be fully convinced that we're not the controller, that actually Krishna is. And here, this controller, this angle that comes in from the controller, but actually the angle being given is shelter. Right? It's different. Because we generally think of control more than shelter. Right? You have to be very, very confident to think in the form of shelter. Generally, you think more as controller. Because Prabhupada gives very elaborately, this defines that we see a machine and it's very complex and very developed and we become very enamored by that. But the intelligent person would be enamored by the person who made it, not by the machine itself. Because the machine itself is just a manifestation of the intelligence and the ability of the person who made it. Right? But in the modern culture, generally who makes things, we never hear about. Right? We just, the thing itself is what's presented. Right? They present the car, the other machines, or the plane, or the different little, you know, audio gizmos. But that's what's special. Not who made it. Right? So, therefore, the infinite and the infinitesimal become very important to us because these are things that catch our attention. Becoming the greatest, becoming this small, you can enter into everything, you know everything, you're everywhere, you control everything. These are the things that attract us because this is exactly what we're not. Right? We want to be God, so these are the two qualities we do not have. Greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. Right? That is what we want. So therefore we're attracted by that. But actually, the point Prabhupada's making, a point Prabhupada's making here is that we should be interested in who is this person who has made everything, who is bigger than the biggest, smaller than the smallest. That's the person we should be interested in. Right? That's special. So that takes it to the point of shelter. That's why in this chapter we open with the shelter aspect. Because he can give that shelter. Okay, because why shelter? Because if we give up our control, you have to have trust that who you give up your control to will take care of it. Right? This is very important. Faith is the first stage in devotional service. Unless the faith is established, then the other parts don't happen. You don't take up Sadhu Sangha, you don't take up Bhajana Kriya in that very seriously. Right? Here's Prabhupada's pointing out at the end that the whole purpose of these things is so that then we will come to the point where we can associate with devotees and hear about the Lord Himself and His personal pastimes. Right? The ones that are Him as shelter. Does that make sense? Right. So, since this verse is trying to establish the faith so that we can take advantage of Sadhu Sangha, because why won't we take advantage of Sadhu Sangha if we're the controller, if we're independent? Right? There's no need. But we need to take shelter of the devotees and the Lord, because that's actually what is our position. We'll try to be independent, but we see everything is interdependent. So there's nothing in our perception that's not interdependent. So nothing, each thing is the shelter of the other. Right? We have a floor here. That's holding up the table. But only because we want to put tables and chairs and tulsi and this board and all these rugs and all you sitting here, do we even bother making this floor? So which one is the shelter of the other? Does that make sense? This is the point. So anything in our perception, the shelter of it is interdependent on something else. So we can't get away from being dependent. That's the point being brought out here, is that we must acknowledge we are dependent, and we are dependent on the shelter of others. So rather than the phantasmagoria of so many varieties of shelter, the ultimate shelter is what's important. So if all the other shelters are connected to the supreme shelter, then that shelter is proper. That is eternal. Does this make sense? So now, here's being pointed out. This canto especially is defining the utilization of the universal form in the devotional process. So here, because it's conclusion, that means we must be able to move on from it, right? Let's say I define something that's very useful. And let's say like opening the car door, right? You want to drive, so it would be essential to open the car door. You're not going to do a lot of driving standing outside, right? Even the kids get inside before they go vroom vroom, right? So you got to get in the car. So now if I tell about coming up to the door, and then there's the key, and then you have to pull on the thing, and you have to pull hard enough, you unlock the door, but not too hard that you rip it off the hinge. All these different things and that. So then you're convinced, yes, the door must be open and all that. But now if we think, yes, I've opened the door, now I'm self-realized, then this is a problem. No. When you're driving, then driving is going on. Before that, it's all preliminaries. So the universal form must be brought out that our conditioned nature must be connected to the Lord. Those elements that don't nicely directly connect. Okay, we smell the flowers offered to the Lord, we touch the bodies of the devotees, we see the Lord, we smell the incense, we offer our obeisances, we walk to the temple. These work really nice. It's really good. But what about your toothbrush that's pink? Why is it pink? Why did you get the, the turbo massager toothbrush? These are points that don't nicely connect. So that's why the universal form is there, because Krishna has expanded into everything. He's expanded into the rules of the scriptures, and through those and that application of his energies, everything in your life you can connect. Right? But having done that, if you think now I am very advanced, no. That is the stage that is nicely situated that you've connected all your material attachments. Actual advancement is liking to hear the pastimes of the Lord. Right? But if you only like to hear the pastimes and cannot tolerate the creation of the Lord, know it, you should be listening to the creation. Right? Because someone who likes the pastimes of the Lord sees the Lord's pastimes in the creation. They don't see the difference. Right? The mother is happy interacting with the child and thinking about how she's dressing and feeding and sitting and laughing. She's also happy to hear how he's with his friends and what he did in school and what he did when he went to camp. And right? Would you call it a good mother if it's only what happens in the house with her she's interested in, and anything with anybody else she's not interested, because she's only interested in the highest interaction with the child? Would you say that's a good mother? Never. So that's a point. So in here it's being pointed out that it's a stepping stone, because we're attached, right? The yogis, this Ashtanga yoga system, the eight levels of the yoga system are common with any of the processes that uplift you to God realization. So devotional service has the same things. We start off with what you should do, what you shouldn't do, how to properly situate yourself, right? How to properly engage your energies, how to withdraw the senses, focus the mind, make Krishna the center of attention, and how to become completely absorbed in Him, and how to surrender to Him. So we have the same process. But for those who are more attached to the gross bodily condition, especially in the way of exercise and that, then the yoga system is used for those persons. Right? If you're attached to physical exercise, then the yoga system helps you connect that. Does that make sense? So it's not a separate system. It's the same system applied for someone who is physically very attached. Does that make sense? And so being in the material world, generally that's a common principle, so it's quite universal. Right? So all of these things are to connect our attachment. Now again, in bringing this up, we have to go back to the beginning, that we don't allow the ego now to get in the way. Right? Because this is now a juncture that we've pointed out, and that you use this. Okay, we've agreed that, okay, I'm not the Supreme Lord. Yes, I have to surrender to Him. Yes, I have to connect everything to Him. How do I do this? Okay, so many aspects of the universal form and the yoga systems that will connect us. Great, I've done it. So now I'm advanced. And we point out that, yes, you're advanced compared to someone who's not advanced. So that's great, but actually advancement within devotional service is more than that. Then it's a matter of the ego comes in the way. So either afterwards, well, why didn't you tell me that in the first place? Or, well, why should I bother with this lower level? I'll just jump straight to the higher level. Right? But this still goes back to the thing of the control. Is that where, and that interdependence, is that we are dependent upon people. And so that dependence on the Supreme Person is what we want. And whatever is what we have to do to get to that, we don't have as a problem. Just like, let's say, addressing the deities, you would consider that a nicely situated position. But to do that, you first have to take a bath and put on clean clothes. But that's dealing with the gross body. Right? It's the external form of it. So one may say, but the more advanced is the actual meditation on the Lord and all the subtle aspects of the puja that we're doing. And these others are gross and simple. Anybody can take a bath, but only a second initiated devotee, then they can do the puja. So then one could conclude, why should I bother taking a bath? I should just go straight into the higher level. Does that make sense? So, therefore, then this balance of this ego, because the ego being Sankarshan, is the situation in which you are. So if we really want to deal with the ego, we have to deal with the ego in what it actually is. Where we are at this moment right now. Identifying that you connect to the Lord, and whatever stage, these advanced stages, you will get there. Right? Does that make sense? So, let us say I'm here in Mayapur. I want to get to Calcutta. So then, I'm not identifying that I'm so far away from Calcutta. No, I just want to catch the bus from, you know, BBD Bob to the temple. Like that. So I'll be out at the front gate saying, you know, where's the bus? BBD Bob to the temple, Cannock Street, you know. Like this. But it doesn't know. BBD Bob is the kind of central plaza. Well, I guess, what to say, the central rundown used to be a nice place area of Calcutta. Okay. So it'll be a problem because I'll never actually get that bus. Well, everyone says, no, hey, this is the bus that'll take you 3 hours to Calcutta. No, no, get the Cannock Street, it's only a half an hour. Okay, the busy time, 45 minutes. No, that's not my bus. My bus is the, because I'm closer. You'd never get there. So the whole point is where you're at right now, it doesn't matter. Right? Because it's understood when you come into the material world, one can be in unlimited situations within it, and it doesn't matter. Each one is a problem. Right? So wherever it is, you use that to get to Krishna. Does that make sense? So doing that, so that means that element of Sankarshan, and here we're going through this, Mahavishnu, he is Sankarshan. So he has entered into everything. So wherever you start from, the potencies that are involved in that conditioned nature, the Lord is there. So the distance is not actually very great. The distance is actually our conditioning to think that it's great. We think we're very far away. It's useful for creating humility, because humility means we will then see ourselves properly in relationship to the Lord and the devotees. But actually the Lord's in the heart, the Lord's in all the potencies, He's in everything that we deal with. So actually if we realize that or recognize that, we're very close to the Lord. So it's a good thing. It's not a problem. So no one should be worried wherever we're at, I'm so fallen or I'm so distant, I can't advance. Or the other is that, well, I'll not recognize or will kind of like finesse my position and just get right into advanced stuff because I don't want to acknowledge actually my position as not being very advanced. So either of these, it doesn't matter because the Lord has entered into everything. He's right there with you wherever you are. So whatever position, He's there. So this is the point, is as shelter, then the whole thing comes off that scary intellectual platform that doesn't give shelter. And it comes to the point of that the Lord is there. He's giving that shelter. So there's no problem. Right? Do we see, understand the process Sukadeva Goswami is using here? Right? He's trying to allay your fears and make it very clear where you stand right now. But he doesn't want to make you afraid that you have no shelter, because in doing it, he's establishing the Lord as the ultimate shelter. So then doing that, that surrender to the Lord means that right now, then that surrender, you advance. Does that make sense? That's the nice thing about devotion. It's simultaneous. Right? It's not like these mechanical systems where this is there, then that is there, then that's... No. It's you just recognize the Lord and already one is advanced. Right? Of course, the problem comes when we forget that the next moment. But it's a matter of we make that endeavor and it remains. Like that. So Sukadev here this is not a dry treatise. That's why Vedanta Sutra is not the top book. Because that simply gives you the technicalities of the whole process. But here it's actually giving it in a way that we as a person can relate to surrendering to Krishna as the Supreme Person. And that process then is perfect. Is that okay? Any questions or comments or yes?
In this Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada mentioned that the Yashoda of the Lord, that pastime is for the bodily attachment.
Yes.
But here in this book, all that chapter mentioned that hearing, vision, and hearing and intellect are someone else.
Are?
No difference.
Yeah. Yes, means there's no difference in that it's the Lord. I mean, or could you get a question? The question was, is that it appears that there's a contradiction here. We're saying that the creation, pastimes of creation of the Lord are for the neophytes, those who are bodily attached. At the same time, we're saying that the pastimes of creation and his other pastimes, there's no difference. Means on the level of transcendence, there's no difference, but as far as the sweetness and all that, there is a difference. There is a difference in rasa. In tattva, there's no difference, because anything that touches the Lord is in touch with the Lord. I mean, it has that transcendental flavor. So these contradictions, seeming contradictions, are brought out because you're trying to look at an item from many different angles. Because when you look at it from one, we become confident, but then in that we may not apply it fully. So the other angle has to be given. So when there is a seeming contradiction, we have to see what's the common point between them. So, in other words, advancement is, for us, is the actual realization of the relationship with the Lord, that faith deepens. Understanding the philosophy and knowing the tattva, that's good, that's important, it's naturally a symptom. But there are academics of this world who sit around the pub drinking beer and discussing, you know, very fine grammatical points about a word that Jiva Goswami uses in one of his sandarbhas. They actually do that for fun. You know, I mean, way beyond what our capacity may be. They can speak Sanskrit, they know all these literatures, they know all these things, and for fun they sit around discussing Jiva Goswami, which is the most, you can't get more technically refined than Jiva Goswami's works. Even other sampradayas will accept that. Right? Like that. Other scholars from other sampradayas read Jiva Goswami's works. They don't read other works, but they read Jiva Goswami's, because how he presents it, you cannot juggle it. Right? Ramanuja, you can adjust it and play with it and break it and Jiva, you can't. Doesn't matter how you take it apart, put it together, and it comes back saying the same thing. So they're so amazed by that, even other sampradayas study it. So therefore, these scholars studying Jiva Goswami, they can't get more intellectually refined than that. But they just do it for fun. Right? So, the element of understanding that, yes, is important, but the element of actually surrendering to that, that's actually the sign of advancement. So then the contradiction goes because, you're separating between the tattva and rasa, that aspect is there. Another one is that in Bhagavatam, we see that creation is described in the pastimes of the devotees. So then again, the Lord is brought into it in such a prominent way that it becomes very attractive. So there's no difference also again. It means transcendental quality is the same, but the particular depth of intimacy, that is different. But that's not artificial. That is not intellectual by studying. That is by service and association that one comes to that realization. So it's just a matter of you associate with the Lord and his devotees in this level, and the other level will come. It's natural. If you like, you always want to hear more, and so more takes you further. Lord Chaitanya asked Ramananda Rai to describe things. So he started with the proper performance of your duties in varnashram to please the Lord. Generally that's considered quite an elevated position, right? Because it's human life, and it's human life properly connected to the Lord. He said it's external. He didn't say it was bogus, very important to note. He said it's external, so meaning there is more to it. That's the external manifestation of it. What's the mood behind it? So then they went deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. So it's automatic that if you have the association of those who are on that platform of depth, by associating with them, hearing from them, then one will want to go more and more until one comes to this platform that Prabhupada and the Acharyas talk about. Is that okay?
You talked about ego.
Ego, yeah.
And you talked about that we may think that we are, you know, I am so advanced, I need not to take bath. Like, it was just one example, like, so more other may be the reason. So, what is the best, knowing the man, say, from my point, if we say, this man, I am not so advanced, already not advanced, and thinking in ego's term. So what should be the best way?
What should be the best way if one is not so advanced in dealing with the ego when it comes to the process of devotional service? Best thing is that what is recommended by Guru Sadhana Shastra, that is followed. Right? And just the ego is put on the side. See, because in the beginning, it means you have a process, Prabhupada defines, is that in the beginning, one separates oneself from the item of disturbance. But as one advances, one does not need to be separated from that. Just like the brahmachari may go to the forest. Because if he stays in the village or in the city, there's so much distraction from his devotional development. But once he becomes more advanced, then he'll be able to maintain that spiritual outlook once he graduates and comes back to the social scene. Does that make sense? So, in the beginning, it's understood that the ego, yes, it's there, we're nonsense, we're puffed up, we're materialist, like this, we throw it out. I'm just a humble servant of Krishna. Now, that's the position we want to be at. So if by doing that in absorption devotional service, it carries us through, we become purified, and that remains, that's great, that's what we actually want. But in doing that, because each has a unique conditioning, right? Then there may be elements of the false ego that get in the way of us thinking, I am the humble servant of Krishna. So in the beginning, because of the newness, the freshness that becomes prominent, life is not complicated, because you just throw everything out, take up the process, it works. But with time, the process becomes habit. You're able to perform the devotional process with greater ease. So then the mind and the senses need something more to engage them, because body, mind, and words should be fully engaged in the Lord's service. So what will happen is they will start to turn back to one's conditioned nature. Right? Because one of you, a distance is there between when you first took it up, where it's obvious this is spiritual, this is material. Now everything you deal with is spiritual. So you have a tendency to forget the actual material influence. So then in doing that, one will become involved again in those things that are important for you, your conditioned nature. So the ego again comes up. So this is the time when one is supposed to then become introspective, because before that, it may not work so well. Right? It means the enthusiasm of taking up the process does everything. It clears out the mind. But once these other things again start to come up, then it has to be addressed. So exactly what kind of ego is it? What exactly is this conditioned nature? And what is actually behind it? Right? Details, okay, we know. But what's behind those details? You know, what's the motive before? What is the attraction to material energy? What is the motive? Right? Prabhupada makes that point, is that it's the prajumna aspect of the Lord, or the false ego, that attracts us to perform material activity. Because Prajumna means we're attracted to the material energy. As Garbhodaksha Vishnu, he enters his Prajumna. So because of that, we're attracted to deal with them. Therefore, there's activity. Right? Unless we're attracted, there'll be no activity. So before that, we just throw it out. We're situated in devotional service, and we just do. But at some point, then these other aspects of our ego are going to come up. Situations that we prefer, attractions that we have, needs that we want to get. Right? And because of that, then our performance of this service will start to maybe become flavored. Right? Because pastime, the Vasudeva, is performed once Shakra, Shampajumna, and Aniruddha are in place. Right? Until thinking and feeling is there, willing doesn't happen, so the activity is not there. So when the thinking and feeling is proper, then willing or the activity will be proper. That makes sense? So therefore one has to then address those elements of ego, of Sankarshan, what do I have, where am I situated? Prajumna, what within this am I attracted to? Aniruddha, what do I want out of it? Right? And if I can connect those then properly to Krishna, then the Vasudeva will be properly connected. Right? Then it will be Vasudeva Sattva, meaning that it's pure. Right? So, end here. 9 o'clock. And then if there's any further questions, we'll continue after. Gruntaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srimad Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Sarvita Gaura Prema.
Is sufficient for happy
feeling? You want to distribute this? Oh. Mataji has some sweets and stuff here for distribution for a happy new year. So if everybody would like to have a happy new year, then here is the happy new year.
I'm trying to get some indication of how I should approach Puri. But I have a question about that. Is it okay for us to be on? I just wanted to clarify, because you were talking about the Kurukshetra mood, but I was also feeling that there are other moods in Puri.
Being a Dom, it's you have the element. It's basically you take the Dom, and depending upon the mood, you have Madhurya, Audharya, or this Ekalama.
I've been looking at it within the Kalama, because, like, I don't know if I'm right, but you have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Gambhira, so, like, you know, feelings of that is Yavat, the mood of Yavat. You have Alana.
Yes, but the point is why Puri? It may be Radharani and Yava. What is Radharani going to think of when she sees Krishna? It's going to go back to their pastimes. In other words, the Braj pastimes will be what's remembered. But the element is what's special there is that he's with Krishna, he can't do anything about it. No, Nirvaikshati, I think, is when there's so many contradictory ecstasies going on at once, one becomes stumped. That I know of, and there's seven different ones. Rupa Goswami gives it as a mix, and he gives it of like yogurt and rock candy and black pepper and this and that. There's seven different tastes. And all of them. Does that make sense? So, means whatever you want, you can take from it. I'm just saying is that it's the reason. Well, otherwise, why does he go to because Mamaji is Vrindavan. It is Vrindavan, so the separation, the intensity of the separation will be as great as if he goes to Puri. Otherwise, why Puri is Dwarka? But Dwarka is already there. So what's the difference from Dwarka over in Gujarat and Dwarka Narissa? Because Dwarka Narissa is that Dwarka where the residents of Vrindavan come and meet Krishna and Kurukshetra and are unable to interact the way they would like. Does that make sense? So therefore, that separation it's just the ideal place because Krishna's there, not he's there as Jagannath, who, when Lord Chaitanya sees him, he sees these people in Shamasundar. But at the same time, it's all, and how everyone deals with them, everything is all formal. Therefore, you can't believe in that same. But the same feelings, whatever pastimes and aspects of separation you want to meditate on, that's fine.
But I was also thinking of going to specific places
like... No, I'm saying that's great. Because all the residents of Vrindavan are doing is thinking of those original pastimes of Vrindavan. So Lord Chaitanya will be doing that in Vrindavan also. Because it's not different. But because it does have that closeness, it is Vrindavan, then it's still close. The intensity is not as great as if it goes to but it's Dwarka without being Dwarka. That's why there's no Rukmini, Dwarkyan, and those different elements that we avoid. So Dwarka is the Gaudiya Vaishnava compliant. I mean, yeah, Puri is Gaudiya Vaishnava compliant Dwarka.
The other thing I wanted to ask is, because I don't know, I haven't read any of it, is Rupa Mandri also at Kurukshetra this year is what is an original activity that we've been
doing? We see the mythology of time because they're all insisting. See, Krishna has come as Radharani, so they all come as the nature because they're all just Radharani. So they're coming. So that's why you see Sridhamana comes from it, because Sridhamana is always instructing Radharani as to how to properly interact with Krishna like that.
So should I should be
meditating
in terms of Rupa Goswami's
giving to Yeah, because that's the connection to it anyway. Because the point is when we chant, when we're remembering the Vrindavan pastimes, technically speaking, we're remembering it through Lord Chaitanya remembering it as Radharani. In other words, how do we get into those pastimes? You can't. So only Krishna can let you in, but you only get in by the grace of the devotee. So if Krishna's taking the root of his devotee, only can you get in. So technically, we're looking at Vrindavan pastimes through the perspective of Lord Chaitanya. And so therefore, then the maid servants become prominent, because in the Vrindavan Leela, they're not the prominent ones. The Asasaki are prominent. But here, they become the prominent.
And one thing that's completely different point, the other day, Sahajramaj was talking about Pragna. Is that, I just want to catch it whether I got it right, where in waking state, but the intelligence is sleeping?
It's not asleep, but it's not, it's working, but it's not the focus. The example could be given is when you're asleep, when in the morning I ask you, how did you sleep, you can tell me.
Okay.
So in other words, or another example would be something's going on, you having an experience. That experience continues as long as you don't intellectualize on it. As soon as you notice it, it's not happening like this. You're having a very good time, and as soon as you say, "Wow, this is great," it stopped.
Okay.
Understand?
Okay.
So the pragya means that it's all blended where it's happening. The experience is going on, but the intelligence is not specifically discerning. It's only working in compliance with it that actually whatever you're doing goes on nicely. But it does not become the perspective.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that before I went. Just to...
Yeah.
Make this personal. Thank you very much.
I want invited you with all your good boys in my home. When you can tell me which day and time is good for you.
Okay. to a Vagisha. Then you can work with him and he'll work it out with the others. Like she wants to invite the boys to her house, so maybe you can work out a time.
Okay.
No, right. We're, you know, discuss with Madhav Gauranga. You have to get back to him. Yeah, so it would take a few, probably a day or two to work it out. Any further questions or any other questions? Or anything else? Nothing else? When are we going to stop talking? Yes. You're getting ready? Okay, about the toothbrush, does it matter? Did it matter to you? When you went to the shelf and toothbrushes, you grabbed anything. So then you don't have to worry about it. Just that, why are you brushing your teeth? Then you don't have to worry about the toothbrush, you have to worry about why teeth are being brushed. Yes, that's the point. That's the process. It means, it sounds like rocket science, but it's that simple. Is that as soon as you understand that, okay, I'm brushing the teeth because you have to be clean, because you have to be clean because then we can perform our devotional service, we perform a devotional service to please Krishna. Therefore, brushing my teeth is to please Krishna, right? If A equals B equals C, then A equals C, right? Like that. So that's the thing, it's that simple. But it's discussed so much because generally we don't want to do it. We either think I am advanced, or as soon as we get into these things, then we're worried we'll get swallowed up by them, or other things, because they're issues for us, so they're a problem. Right? So what connects easily goes nicely, and it's probably already connected. You probably find much of your life is connected like that. What we're talking about is places where there are issues. Why is it an issue? Why do you care? You know, you think about it. What pushes your buttons? Those are the things that you have to contemplate and figure out how to connect those to Krishna. Right? One may say, well, push my buttons, you know, all Maya bodies get me, or this or that. Okay, the Acharyas also deal with the Maya bodies, you know? You know, so there's something behind it. Why is this thing about, it means it's great, because Maya bodies are going against devotional service, so therefore you're engaging your conditioned nature that dislikes them to establish Krishna consciousness. Great, that's the process of engaging the conditioned nature in the Lord's service. But ultimately, then there is a point, why is it that, why specifically Maya bodies? Why not Mayaya Pratigyanas? Why not Mudas? Why not the scientists? Why not the Shaktas? Why not the, you know, non-devotional political leaders? You know what I'm saying? There's something there. Why specifically them? Because there'll be something there is that they, you know, that merging or that, how you say it, being freed from the material energy is very important for you. But you don't like how they're getting freed from it. So they're wrong. And I'm right. And then there's the element of the ego is that I have something that I'm more right than somebody else about. You know what I'm saying? So, At some point that must be addressed. In the beginning it doesn't matter because one is absorbed and one is not worrying about one's attachment. But one will see with time that you might find that there are stumbling blocks in the devotional process and they generally go back to the reasons why we have our conditioned nature. Does that make sense? So the point is it's not anywhere. I give the example of the toothbrush because it's absurd and no one will get upset. If I actually went in and nailed down something, then we might get some, you know, like that. So in a general audience, we don't do that. If it's a specific audience of the same nature, then we can use points that will hit home there. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, when you start getting into position, money, family, advancement, these kind of things, then they push buttons. And then what happens is the ego comes up because of attachment. Once attachment is involved, reason is lost. Right? That's the Rupa Goswami's definition of attachment. You know, one of the elements is when attraction crosses reason. You know, you have reasoning, reason intellectualizing. When your attraction to something crosses over reasoning about it, it's called attachment. Right? Does that make sense? Like a family member you're attached to. And you may not see anything wrong with what they do. Others see so much wrong with what they do. But it doesn't bother you because the attachment, you don't reason about that. Does that make sense? So the thing is in trying to get the point across, you have to use a neutral enough thing that everyone's intelligence will continue to work and the issues don't come up. Otherwise, issues come up, and because we don't necessarily follow the culture of this Panchanga Nyaya, where then they will very clearly present their point. I don't agree with you on this point because of this. No, first is, oh, you know, you always say that, you sannyasis, you don't know, like that, you're always like that, this whole movement's in the shape it's in because of you guys, and you're just that. And you're going to hear that for a long time before finally, then like that. It's just the way it goes. So you want to avoid that. Previously, I used to use much more pointed things, but I don't know if you were here, but we had two godbrothers, you know, in the class coming up on the points that created such the issues in themselves. They started in the class fighting with each other, completely taking over and oblivious that there were another 100 people in the room. They didn't care. So one said this, and it's my right to give a reply. Since when is it your reply? I'm giving a class. It's nothing to do with you two. You know, we're just, you know, it's part of the etiquette to ask if there's any questions or comments to elucidate what's been said for the benefit of others, not for you to soliloquize, you know, make, I say, soliloquize? You know, you get the idea, right? Your particular viewpoint. So I just was finding that more and more with time, I was getting more and more of this reaction because the examples would get more and more pointed. So therefore, the point is whatever in your life, the conditioned nature means you have a specific combination of the modes of nature, which is based on particular attachments. Therefore, you have a particular form, mind, intelligence, ego that you have. Right? So then, those must be addressed. And because it's so varied, then, you know, you give an example that it'll be, you know, it'll be taken, but at the same time as you're supposed to apply the intelligence on it. That's also a weak point. The other way is that you give something, then they'll think it's funny, but they don't think it applies to them. So, and if you make it where it applies to them, then their ego comes up. So it's a problem. Does that make sense? Yes, it is a good thing to deal with it, but you also have to be careful is that it is not the thing, because in dealing with it, we are dealing with the universal form. Because our conditioned nature is made up of various elements, right? There's thousands of arms, thousands of heads, thousands of legs and eyes and noses. So we have one of those, this nose, and, you know, it's like going to, you know, a la carte, and I'll take this nose, that eye, that ear, this skin, that hair, that, you know, like that, and then you put it together and you get, you know, what we have. So, therefore, Prabhupada's pointing out here is we should not become distracted by the mechanics of it. We use it just like the machine is used, but we're more impressed with the person who made it, but we use the machine. So this element of connecting the conditioned nature to the Lord is used as a process of connecting those things that don't easily connect to Krishna to be able to connect them. But the mechanics of it, we don't get enamored by or distracted by. It has its place, and it's used, and we move on. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, the example is, okay, you want to cook something with potatoes, so you get out the potato peeler, but if you're completely enthralled with the potato peeler, then you may kind of forget that once the potatoes are peeled, it's time to move on and, you know, cut them into pieces and then put them in the pot. Does that make sense? So the grosser is there, but then you get into the subtleties of it. And so then because it's subtle, the tendency will be to think that it's advanced. It's more advanced than that. It's the most advanced within, not as advanced. Does that make sense? Like that. So here also, depending upon what point we're being made, we use the term advanced. Right? Because a madhyama is in this jnana yoga. But according to this, they're dealing with this external, so technically it's not so advanced. But at the same time, it's because they're dealing it on the metaphysical platform and seeing its connection to the Lord, therefore it is more advanced than only dealing with the externals of the Varnashram system and that the neophyte would be doing. Right? They're looking at what's behind the Varnashram. Okay, let us say, okay, you know, we're in this varna, and we're dealing with that person in that varna. We're a Brahmin, we're dealing with a Kshatriya. So therefore, you know, we're supposed to be, you know, like the, how you say, the senior. Therefore, we're supposed to be, you know, kind. We're supposed to be this, we're supposed to be that. Okay. And so therefore, our duties are like that. And so that's the first stage. We've seen and engaged our nature nicely. But the next stage is, well, why do we have to do that? Right? Because the Kshatriya, because of their attachment to the element of control, they like to get done what the Brahmins talk about. So because of that, that controlling thing, that must be recognized, because they are pragmatists, they have to get results. Right? They're Shastric pragmatists, they have to get results. So therefore result means there's been an endeavor, they must be recognized for that. Therefore, the Brahmin will glorify the Kshatriya for what he's done, even though the Brahmin is the higher. And in doing this, this keeps the Brahmin also humble. Right? Otherwise, you can go, well, I'm the senior, why I have to? And we run into that constantly in our daily life. You know? Like that. I'm the parent. You know, the kids got to come around to how I'm dealing with it, rather than, well, if I'm actually the senior, I have to find a way to get through to them. Right? Otherwise, then why do they need you? If they're already so perfect that they do everything right, why do they need a parent? They need a parent because they will help them understand. So if they're not understanding, whose fault is that? Right? So that's, but doing that, then that, what does that do? That creates humility. It creates knowledge. It situates one in goodness. So therefore the process is important. But still, so it will be advanced because the externals are not what's important. It's that this is what you have to do to make ourself advance and to help others advance. Right? It's a different platform. So it is advanced in what's said here. But at the same time, it's not as advanced as those who, hearing, you know, the Lord's name, form, qualities, and pastimes is their main inspiration. Right? Does that make sense? It's another form of the devotional process. They always think of Krishna, they like to hear the pastimes of Krishna. So the karma element is there, the jnana element is there, but the jnana or the bhakti element becomes more prominent. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Does that make sense? So the idea is it should make you think, but it shouldn't distract us. Right? We want to be realistic about our position, but we don't want to lose our focus. You know? We don't want to figure out, oh, I'm so far away. Right? Like, let's say, okay, someone who is addressing anartas, They actually are looking at, okay, what are the problems in my life? Okay, I like to control everything. You know, I want to be the center of attention. You know, I want everything to go my way. And, you know, and then I'm very strong on certain points, but I'm weak on other points and stuff like that. Then you can bring into them, okay, there are four kinds of anarthas, and each of those have four divisions. So you have 16 basic categories, you have main categories of anarthas that you're dealing with. That works for someone who's addressed that, but someone who's just, okay, you know, I'm, you know, following the four wheel principles, I'm chanting the rounds, I'm getting the Mangal Arati, and, you know, it's tough, but I'm doing it, I'm hanging in there. You don't come along and tell them about the 16 anarthas. Because then they just go, wow, I can't, I mean, I'm having trouble enough with what I'm doing, let alone that, so hey, I'm going back home tomorrow. Does that make sense? So that's the point, is it works, then it comes. In other words, it's there, and if it comes up, it's used. If it's not come up, it's not needed. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So that is the focus, is that you have, let's say, so many tools in your toolbox, and you know what they're all for, but you only use the ones you need when you need them. You know? You don't get into your Phillips head screwdriver when you only have straight screws. But you have it just in case, because there are machines that you get that do have them. So if you do have one, well, here it is. You use it. And if you don't, it sits in the box. Is that okay? Is it a very important...
There are like such... it's such a type of studying that I have to do to really see, you know, like, first of all, to understand it, then to apply it, so...
How important is it, this concept of Vasudeva Prajumna Aruda and Vasudeva? In the false ego. Well, it comes up in the second canto. It'll have been earlier. I think it's in I'm not sure which chapter it's in, but it's in the second canto where Prabhupada actually explains it and gives Gita verses that connect with the four so you get an understanding. Like Gita Hira Hirama Shaglani, but that's Shankarshan. So it means, okay, so you're there, you're in the temple, people aren't doing things right, there's all these pilgrims coming, bumping into devotees, and not watering Tulsi right. You go out there, straighten that out. But that's Sankarshan. That's, everything's got to be right, and I'm controlling it. Right? Did anybody tell you to straighten it out? No. But that's where it lies. Or... I have my house, and you know, it's got to be like this, and I knock out this wall, and you know, move the kitchen from here to there, and do all these different things, and that's Sankarshan. Right? Devotees are readjusting their house according to Vastu. That's nice, but that's Sankarshan. What are you saying? So it does apply in your life, you know, that, you know, you put the sari on so the palu is on the top instead of on the bottom. That's Sankarshan. You know what I'm saying? You put your sweater on right, you know, correctly instead of inside out and backwards. That's Sankarshan. Because in other words, everything being in its right place according to the rules and knowing how to deal with it properly. You know, it's a sweater, so you don't yank it off. It stretches. So there's a way you grab it from the bottom, you pull it off, and then when you get it out, then you put it back. You don't leave it inside out. Right? That's Sankarshan. Does that make sense? So every situation that you're in, that's Sankarshan. Every desire to be involved in everything, that's Prajumna. Any need that you have, that's Aniruddha. And any activity you perform, that's Vasudeva. Does that make sense?
I guess I just never
applied
it before your teachings, and I'd like to learn more, but it just seems like. How do you put it all together?
How do you put it all together? You just start. In other words, what aspect of it makes sense, you use. That's all. In other words, and you're trying to arrange everything in situations and all that, is it all Krishna conscious? You're trying to arrange so many situations, is it Krishna conscious? What is your motive behind it? If it is, great. Right? We only bring it up because maybe it's not, just you question it. If it is, fine. All the things you like to do, all the things you want to interact with, why is it Krishna conscious? You know, anything that you need, you have to have. You know, you want to get a result. Is it Krishna conscious? If those three are, you know, you come up with yes, then the fourth one, your activities, then they'll always be Krishna conscious. Because the activity will always be based on the other three. Because activity, as was pointed out, was that Shankar, Shanta, Jumna, Adi, Ruda, they have these Kalyana Gunas, they each have two. But Vasudeva has all six. Right? So in other words, to perform the activity, you have to, you need all six of the qualities. Right? They'll be used in any activity. You know, more or less proportions, but that's what's there. But you have to see that those others are properly, then properly situated, then the result will, the endeavor will be correct. Don't ask what the Kalyana Gurus are, because I can't remember that as the next question. But let's say Prajumna is, I think, opulence and, well, not tejas, virya, right? It means if you think of Cupid, someone who is has energy and has opulence, they're automatically attractive. Right? Right? A kid that has energy and is beautiful is automatically attractive. Right? So anything, someone with money, someone with position, someone, it's attractive. Right? Like that. Because there's potency, and there's, in other words, potency and beauty, you combine that, that is attractive. So that needs to be there. So that's in our life. Why is it we choose things? Because we're seeing that element in it. So what we consider is beautiful or what we consider is opulence, that's where we move towards. That will be different, right? Each person will be different. Does that make sense? So like that, each of them have their... I don't know them all. I think Anuruddha is tejas and shakti. In that you have the energy, in other words, there's attainment of the energy, and there's the tejas is the enlightenment, or the, how do you say, an opulence is illuminated, so therefore it's experienced. Does that make sense? Huh? It's a need, yes. The Chaturvyuha was Sambandha, Abhideya, and Prayojana. Yes. Sankarshana and Prajumna are Sambandha. Vasudeva is Abhideya, and Aniruddha is Prayojana. Because in Sambandha, you have to have the field itself and the attraction to the field. Because if there's no attraction to the field, then it won't cross reason into attachment. Right? Because Abhideya is knowledge, right? So that means you have to go from attraction across to attachment. Only then you'll come back and then perform the activity. Right? Because you use it, intelligence, to interact with your attachments, or attain your attachments. But you have to have been attached before you'll make that endeavor. Does that make sense? Yeah, 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 you want to know, because it's, I mean, it's, in other words, it's different aspects of Krishna. I mean, ultimately, things go back to Krishna's four personalities. The Dhira Datta, Dhira Lalita, Dhira Prashanta, and Dhira Odatta. Like that. So they all... Dhira Datta means... that's given to Ramachandra. This is Nectar Devotion. So that's Vasudev. Is that properly performed everything? It's all the activity itself was perfectly done, right? Dear Lalita, then is you see is manifest fully in Krishna's interaction with the gopis. You know, he becomes, in other words, he comes under the affection of another person, right? Because of their affection, therefore your attraction to that, you come under their control. Like that. Dhira Prashanta. So that means your inspiration to act. Dhira Prashanta, then your, that's, is the ideal. You come to that perfection position. Ramachandra is the performance of the activities. Right? While the Aniruddha aspect is that oneself is perfect. You know what I'm saying? Just like we have the pastimes itself, and we have the perfection behind those pastimes. Does that make sense? So the example given of that is like Yudhishthira Maharaj. He's just perfect. Right? And Dhirodatta is Krishna. Like when he chastises the demons, like, you know, tells Pondraka he's the frog, and now the black snake, Krishna is going to come and eat him. Stuff like that. So that's Sankarshan, where improper things are corrected, proper things are established. Does that make sense? So it's in other words, it's just different aspects of Krishna in his pastimes. So it means you means the other three don't go well unless it means it's, unless the situation is correct and things that are improper for the situation are removed, right? Then how will the other three go on? How will you be attracted and attached and interact if the situation's wrong? Does that make sense? You can't apply it. So what will you do? You will try to get this, make the situation. You're here, and there's a big crowd, and your kid's over there. So in your attachment, you want to interact, but can you? No, because the Sankarshan is wrong. You have to get yourself over there and get them over to you. Then you can interact. So it's Krishna. So then... we can read about Krishna as the different aspects of his personality in that. So you have Sankarshan, I mean, Sankarshan is Balaram, Vasudeva is Krishna. And then Prajumna and Aniruddha are there in the Dwarka pastime. So you have that aspect you can look at. You can look at it from the element that the Lord has entered into everything. Yeah, you know, like that. Or you just have it, you just take it back that, you know, what is your deity, then he's the one who's come in these aspects. In any case, it's him. Okay.
Connection to something you said earlier about Dharma and ritual. I think there's some confusion about two concepts. One is traditional, where children are brought up to develop service attitude. But now it's, as some people call it, the century of the child, right?
The century of the child.
Century of the child, where the attention is on the child, to serve the child.
Century of the, no, child, no. That's spelled with an M. It's called, it means the proper, it would be M-O-S-T-E-R. Yeah. The proper spell.
The idea that the parents should serve the child.
The difficulty comes in this is both those angles miss the point because you're creating a duality there. The Vedic both have to be included. The point is the child is the center in that the situations that you will create and the endeavors that you will make will always consider the child because they're part of the scene now. But at the same time, as in that, what you're trying to do is establish the eternal tradition. So they both run at once. So that's why you see is those who are too strict, their kids go away and become monsters, and those who are too liberal, I mean who are liberal, their kids from day one are monsters. The difference is the ones, their kids were nice when they were young, then they became monsters later, and the other one, they were monsters from the day they started. The monsters they will be. Like that. Generally, the first one is, you could say, is more correct as a platform, because the situation is correct. You have some values that are human, that are correct. I mean, the first one is what you said, was that you're trying to develop a proper, you know, devotional service attitude in the child. That's the correct position, because anybody born in a devotee family is... Okay, now you're going to get examples of buttons. Anyone born in a devotee family, they were devotees before, no question. They're born in your family to go back to Godhead, not to be dealt with by some new agey liberal thing. If they wanted that, why would they be born in a devotee family? It's just much more qualified new agey people than devotees. Devotees aren't that good at being new agey. They're pretty good, but not as good. I mean, the people I have seen, you know, that these, you know, they're going to seances and Ouija boards and UFOs and just the way they talk and think and all their rings. And, I mean, it's just like devotees don't come near what a hardcore New Age person is. Like that, they're good, but they're not really good. They know too much. So if they were supposed to be brought up in this, why were they born in the family of devotees? I mean, how many devotee families are there? Maya is so stupid? Or is it the parent is so stupid? Right? Someone who took up devotional service and then leaves it, rejects it, is called a Naradhamma. The lowest of mankind. So those kids that reject devotional service actually are the lowest living entities in the universe. And if the parents, by their new agey approach, do that to them, where does that place them? Yes. Because liberalism actually is not liberal. It's the farthest thing from liberal. It's just you take the keyhole and move it from the right and push it over to the left. Because liberal people are not liberal at all. Because if you want to do something traditional, they got something to say about it. So they're not actually liberal. They're just as hard-line, nasty, self-centered, keyhole vision people as what they complain about on the other side. That's why I say there's a duality. It can't work. They don't know what they're doing. Just because they had the child does not mean they actually know what they're doing. This is probably the biggest misnomer, is because somehow or another you worked out how to get pregnant and you had the child and the child didn't die in childbirth. Therefore, that qualifies you as the world expert on child raising. That probably would come number two after everyone thinking I'm not going to die. As far as very fallacious statements. What is there, there's an advantage because they're attached, they will try to make it work. They will give their best, what they consider best. It doesn't mean their best has anything to do with what's best. But they will give it because they're attached to the child. So that's actually their only qualification. And this whole thing, you don't understand, and until you become a parent, you don't know. This is just saying, unless you're attached to something, you really don't know how to deal with it. In other words, I'm saying that third-class intelligence reigns supreme, and first-class of hearing or observing is nonsense. That's actually what's being said. Right? So the reality is you have a duty to train the child. So if they're not taking up the values, it means you're not a good teacher. There's something wrong with your method. Just because you're attached, okay, you fed them, you clothed them, you went through a lot of hell for them, that they have to pay you back for. I mean, that you can't get around. That's something very special. But as far as getting across Krishna conscious values, you have to know how to teach. Just because you said so isn't enough. You went into the classroom and the teacher said, "I said so," and that's it, everybody accepts. No. You could do that with little kids, but can you do that with teenagers? You know? Napoleon Bonaparte, he was a strange man. Teacher, why? Because I said so. Any teenager would accept that? No. Well, you know, he's a bad guy if you think he's a bad guy, but if you think he's a good guy, he's also a good guy. So, you know, however you want to look at it, it's like, what's the standard? How am I supposed to look at it? Is it good or bad? Right? And they'll say, well, you can't teach that to teenagers. You have to give them the space. You go ask a teenager, what exactly is good? What's in? What can I use this word? They'll say, no. Oh, I wouldn't use that. Would you dress like this? No. Would you dress like this? Yeah, that's cool. They have an exact, you know, razor blade definition of what is correct to do and what's not to do in their world. And then you have the parents, oh, well, you know, that you don't want to get too, you know, they like that, you know. This one, you know, is strong with their kid and their kid went away. I don't want my kid to go away. So actually what it is I'm more worried about myself and the kids rejecting me and hating me later and not being there for me when I'm old and no one's there to take care of me. That's actually what I mean by my new agey viewpoint. I'm only interested in my goddamn self. So that's what I mean, what's behind it. There's a standard, and those standards must be gotten across to the kid. You know? The three-year-old kid comes out and starts insulting the devotees, and then the mother laughs. Oh, how cute. It's demoniac behavior. It's not cute. Why the kid hasn't been told, you don't insult devotees? They may make a mistake, so you give them space. You don't mind because they're a kid. But to say, it's all right, they're a kid. When are you going to take care of it? When are you going to teach them? Right? Later on, when the storm hits, then we'll talk about closing the window. Already the one window's been ripped off and the other one, the glass has been broke out. But you know, hey, I'm making my endeavor. I'm doing my best. I'm closing the window. You know, hey, give me space, get on me, right? I've heard this so many times. Well, you know, you got to do this, you got to do that, and all these things. No, but... And then they turn older and they tell their old man where you can shove it, and they walk out on him, and he's a pothead. And then, well, you know, you got to let them make their own choices, and all these things. You know, 1 year ago you didn't talk like that. So the thing is the point is attachment is the motive to be a good parent. But attachment's not enough. It's not enough. Because if we really look at it, if we really want to define attachment, it could be pointed out where you're actually not that attached. You're only attached in areas you want to be attached. Otherwise, why is the kid sitting in front of the television and you're over talking on the phone with your friends? That means you're not really attached to your kid. You're only attached to your kid when you want to interact with your kid. When I want to interact, I want my kid there. When I don't want to interact, hey, I want them busy doing something else. So the whole point is it's the middle that's correct. That can accommodate both. If you can't accommodate both, no chance in hell you'll ever be a good parent. If you can't make the child the center in that you're trying to train them in what's the standard, and so you're training according to how they can understand it, you will fail. Guaranteed. And it's going on every day. Every day there's a newer and newer failure. So the two have to be balanced. Right? There are standards, and those standards are real. And to go against the standards, ignore those standards, is nonsense. But how to get those standards across to the kid has to be according to what the kid can actually understand. The right moment, the right thing said, yes. Because I want to say it now, I got to say it maybe the wrong time. You know, the kid's there with his friends, no, I got something to say. Oh, you've lost that kid if you say it. Yeah, it means, and you and your, yeah, well, I did the right thing, I told him. No, you didn't. You did the wrong thing. Let it go. They're with their friends. Let it pass them. And then when they come home, then you ask them, hey, what's going on? So that's the thing. You have your standards, but it's the same thing as what we're saying. Wherever you are at, you start from there. So the kid's a nonsense. Okay, he's a nonsense. We start from him being a nonsense. How to get him to the standard? The standard is there. Liberal people have no standard. It moves. Somebody sneezes, it moves over here. Someone else sneezes, it moves over there. There's no standard. How can they ever get anything done? There's nothing in the material world that functions on this modern so-called liberalism. Nothing. No economics, no politics, no education, nothing that actually gets something, gets a result. You have to have a standard. Then you use your intelligence how to get the particular person from wherever position they're in to the standard. That's parenting.
So we could say the standard is the objective, and the way to apply it is subjective.
Yeah, in other words, means the standards are traditional and right wing. Our view is right wing. But our application of it, the art of it, we would call liberal. So that's the point. They're trying to take a liberal philosophy with liberal application. They have no philosophy. Therefore, their application never works. Right? And the other ones, they have their standard strict thing. But when they apply it, it's also strict. And so therefore, it also doesn't work. Externally at will, they'll know what to do in all these. You go into all these traditional families in the West and you see they this and that and they don't do, but there's a lot going on underneath that is not good. Externally it looks great, but it's not good. So the point is you have traditional standards and you have a liberal method of applying that. Liberal meaning that you're broad-minded enough to find a way to make the standard work. You know what I'm saying? I'll give an example. No, I won't. Okay. Does that make sense? No, in this one. This is an example. It might be taken wrong. It's the wrong situation. Yes. Does that make sense? But in that is that you could hear Mataji was saying that if the parents are together, they follow together, meaning together, or together meaning that they're able to apply it. Yeah, it'd be hard to apply the other one in this sense. Of course, that's there. Yeah. So,
in other words, it's not like do what I say, not what I do.
Yeah. Well, my example was one of those that was going to be. So, it means the parents themselves, but what is important there in that, it means I'm fully agreeing with what you're saying. This is for the parent themselves to contemplate. Is the example they're setting, would they set that example if the kid wasn't there? Means, in other words, just like this. The kids are all there, the parents dancing in the kirtan. If the kids weren't there, would the parent be dancing? If the parent wouldn't dance, the kids will not dance, even though the parent's dancing. If the parent would dance whether the kids are there or not, that kid will dance. so that they agree on it, but it's got to be more than agree. It's got to be that is your lifestyle. So in other words, whatever is the lifestyle and values of the parent, that only the child will take. But, yes, if the values in that are more traditional, then the result you see will also be more similar. If the values are more liberal, you'll get the child will be exactly like the parent, but it may be very hard to tell that it is the same. I'll give an example. Parent is complaining, my kid never goes to the temple, doesn't like to come to the temple, I don't know what's going wrong, and everything like that. Okay, let us step back. And if there's a big festival, only then he'll go because his friends are there and, you know, there's prashad happening. But otherwise, they won't go regular when we go. Okay? That is the parent's perception. And so, therefore, my kid is not like me. But we would point out, no, the kid's exactly like you. Because you only go to the temple when you want to go. You only go on Sunday morning. But you go every Sunday morning. And you go at the festivals. But your complaining is he doesn't want to go on Sunday, he only wants to go at the festivals. So you see it's a difference. But actually it's the same, because actually I should be going every day, that's the standard, but I have independently chosen what I think is good for me, so I've chosen every Sunday. And my child has chosen only at the festivals, so that's what's good for them. So they're going. So actually they're exactly the same as me. So, therefore, the liberal parents will find their kids will be a lot different than them. The traditional, and get across, will find to be more similar. Like that. But the point is the kids aren't different. Kids will never be different. Otherwise, you look at it, the lifestyle that, let's say, you live now, you're a devotee, but the lifestyle you live, you know, your general comfortable, if you had the money and the facility to live how you'd want to live, would it be kind of, at least in the same economic and social status as what you grew up in? Yes, that's the point. It would be exactly the same. Otherwise, why is it here? You walk into practically any house over here, and I could have walked in any house in L.A., you know what I'm saying? Only difference is the pictures are about Krishna, okay? The kitchen doesn't smell like me. Otherwise, it looks just like, you know, middle America. You know? And some will be, you know, lower middle class. Like that. That makes sense? And if somebody's, you know, upper middle class or, you know, high class, it's because that's what they grew up in. And that's you going from karmi parents to you as a devotee, and you don't even associate with them at all, or they're that, but it's still the same. So you may say, you know, the parents may think, oh, my kids didn't become like me at all. All they have to do is come visit your house. It's exactly the same. Sense. So it is going on. So it's just a matter of whether you get any credit for it or not. That's the point. The kids will become like you, but you only get credit if you actually turn them into devotees. Otherwise, you don't get credit for producing them. It means the endeavor and time and anxiety and money that you put into it, that of course is there. But as far as making them devotees, that only Prabhupada says that they're 16 and they've accepted devotional service, you know, on their own volition, then you're successful as a parent. You actually made a devotee. Of course, 16 years, that much money and time, if you put into you know, some field of ISKCON preaching, you might be able to make more than one or two devotees. Right? You know, hundreds of thousands of dollars and the time and no sleep, right? You have a kid, 2 years, no sleep, okay? If you put in that much time into, you know, you say, what would happen? You know what I'm saying? But that's okay. The point is we're attached to those things. We need those things. Therefore, we engage in those things because devotees haven't perfected themselves. They do have to go back to Godhead, so they have to come. They have to be born again. So better they're born in the family of devotees, where they're going to get that association. Right? So it is a valuable service. Lord Chaitanya was always pleased when the grihastha devotees had children, because there's opportunity for another devotee to perfect themselves. So it's glorious. But at the same time, as one has to see it in perspective. Like that. Otherwise, means pride has been a big problem. Pride in the past of those of the renounced order has caused a particular, just cultivation of the Western lack of responsibility in relationships. That's there. But at the same time as now the grihastha's pride, and that somehow or another they got genitals and figured out how to make them work, that they know everything. So I'm saying both of them are very far from reality of social, proper social intercourse. It's just neither of them work. You know, you had the reign of the detached, authoritarian leaders. But when did that age stop? It broke down a long time ago. Individuals gone, I think. And how long we had the liberal, the century of the grihastha? And are we getting anywhere? You know what I'm saying? So that's the point, is that each is based in scripture, so each has a point that's right, but their weaknesses is they reject what the other one has to say. The liberals reject the conservatives reject the liberals. The point is each of them have valid points. But if they try to say they have the complete point, that's where they're wrong. Liberals have half, conservatives have half. You put the two together, that's called the middle. That's called the middle path. That's broad-minded. You can see from liberal to conservative, but if you only see conservative or only see liberal, that's closed-minded. So the term liberal is actually a misnomer. It's a misapplication of the word. Because they say they're more liberal, they're not liberal.
There's another word used,
progressive. But progressive means you're going somewhere. That means you know where you are, where you're going, and you have standards how to get there. But that's what the liberals don't have. That's exactly what they don't have. So that's even a bigger misnomer to say because you're progressive. You know? Probably, yeah. You'd have to find a term. What a term means you kind of allow anything to happen?
Permissive.
That would be the term. You could say restrictive or permissive. That would probably be a more valid definition. But you have to know where to be permissive and where to be restrictive. You know, it's not just only this or only that. You know, it takes both to actually get it done. That's why you have all through history all these parenting things, family things, educational things, anything. You always have this swing because it's this or that. You know, is it by rote? Do you put the things into the kid, or do you draw out the knowledge? But you know, if the pot's empty, what are you going to draw out? So you got to put something in, then you can draw it out. So that's the thing. So you have these two schools fighting with each other, and they'll never get anywhere because you have to first put in and take out. If we're so just drawing out, why don't we draw out from them the alphabets of the letter, the alphabet? Why are we so restrictive that there's got to be these 26, Roman letters, Let them make their own, You want to express yourself. Why does it have to be words? Why can't it be grunts or... if you really wanted to take it, so they themselves, it's just a matter of the how much. It's just that the means one group prematurely tries to get them to, you know, think themselves, okay, you have a bomb shelter and it will only hold 7 people, and there are 15 people who want to, you know, are there, who want to get into the bomb shelter. There's a doctor, there's a cook, there's an extremely beautiful, you know, last month's playboy playmate. There is a nuclear scientist. There is your mother. You know, which ones of them would you put into it and give your reasons? You know, like that. Isn't it seventh grade? They are subjected to all this kind of stupidity. So it's premature because they haven't taught you what are the values, social values, by which you would even judge these things in the first place. Right? They haven't given you the tools by which you'll make a decision. Right? Think means you can analyze. Once you analyze, but if you haven't pointed out that, okay, these are columns. If I say, well, how many things are there here, you know, holding up a, you know, the wall? You know, but I don't know what a wall is, and I don't know what pillar is. So how am I going to say, you know? Like that. So it means you have to give information. The other ones only give information and don't teach the art of utilizing it in an individualistic way. So one emphasizes the individual, the other emphasizes the, you know, the being a part in the system. But you have to use both. Right? The system is made of individuals. The individuals have to, if they're going to relate, have to fit into the system. So it's still more of these interdependent things that Krishna is talking about here. They're both interdependent on the other. Without a standard, you know, then means you have a standard by which you can judge. Why do you call it a standard? Because then from there you judge everything else. Right? That means there's a variety. Because if there's a standard and there's no choice, why do you need a standard? Because it always works that way. But you need a standard because there's a variety of ways of viewing it or applying it. Right? Does that make sense? And what's the use of a variety of ways of applying it if you can't bring them together and make it into something? Otherwise I have this and I have that, great, but unless I can bring it together and do something with it, where's the social interaction, right? Right? Social interaction, liberals are supposed to be socially interactive, but where are the standards on how you interact? Right? Does that make sense? You know, so where do you, how do you define where someone's right?
New standards tend to be replacing old standards, such as
new standards
between husband and wife being based on equal partnership.
Means you're thinking based on equal partnership. Okay, that's okay. You want to do that, but the point is, it's still equal partnership of what? Of a male and a female. But then, if you're going to say equal partnership, that's okay, but you're going to have to define what is male and what is female. If you can't do that, how do you say they're equal? How do you define what is equal? Right? The guy gets one shirt as a gift. So you're going to give one blouse to the lady? Will she have considered that a complete present? But you can give a single shirt to a man. Right? So that's equal. Right? The guy has his running shoes, he has his work shoes, you know, he has his golf shoes. Like that, and has his house slippers. So, why don't we just get 4 for the lady? So, we want to talk equal. Yes, let us talk equal. But the point is it doesn't work because they're different. So what's the standard? In other words, equal means each one should be getting what they need in the relationship. And each one should be performing what they add to the relationship. Because there's something the man adds that the woman cannot add. And there's something the woman adds that the man cannot add. So that's what they should be doing. That's equal. In other words, equal means compatible, not same. Otherwise, try eating, you know, your, you know, breakfast with two bowls. Forget the spoon. You know, why is it there should be a difference? One's big and one's small. We want equality. Or use two spoons. Right? You know, the spoon. Why is it I can't hold the milk? You know, okay, put one spoon on the table, pour in the spoon of milk, and then with the other spoon, take it out and eat it. So the point is it's compatible.
Complementary.
Complementary, yes. Complementary. That's the point. But unless you know it as a man and know it as a woman, it won't work anyway. You can try whatever philosophy you like. It can't work. Because they're two different species. It can't work. So the point is in the same way as you have to know what is a kid. You have to know what is a parent. You know, you have to know what is authority. You have to know what is submission to authority. You know, you have to. If you don't know these things, how you'll get it across to your kids? If you don't know who you are, how will you get that across to your kids? If you don't know who you are, then no one else will know either. So your kids won't know who you are. So how do they think? So subconsciously they pick it up. What we defined before is that we're the same as our parents, but subconsciously we pick it up. Only on things that they specifically got through to us, then we can say, yes, I got that from the parent. But that you might find is only a handful, you know. Every boy can say there was this one occasion where his father sat him down and told him this one thing, you know, and then that stuck with him for life, or his uncle or his grandfather or the girls and the mother said, or the father. There's like one or two things that they do that. You know what I'm saying? So, therefore, it's constant training. You have to know what it is. You know what I'm saying? Then you can do something. We don't want to scare anybody and they don't know what they're doing. The point is attachment's not enough. We have to apply what's here in the pages. So if we didn't get it across, you know, it's just like, okay, you were a devotee. And you volunteered for the situation, you were given a very simple lifestyle, and it was explained to you. But does the parent ever explain to the child a particular lifestyle? No. But generally not, because due to attachment, possession does a strange thing. Possession creates a closeness or a bonding. The one sees minimal difference between yourself and the other and the possessed. So therefore, you automatically think they think like you. That's why nothing gets explained. That's why in the Vedic system, the teacher is so important. Because the teacher is a parent that doesn't have bodily attachment. So therefore, they work on intelligence rather than attachment. And then they're trying to explain everything to the kid why they're supposed to do it. Does that make sense? That's why you see grandparents do really good with teaching grandchildren, because they're attached, but if something goes wrong, it's not their kid. The problem is, the grandchild. So it's like, because you see, the grandparents are so relaxed in that, you know? Parent finds out the kid's smoking. Oh man, parents are smoking. You know, they're coming home yelling and screaming and, you know, flailing things. And it turns into a whole scene. Grandparent just looks at it. You're smoking. Yeah. Why are you smoking? Smoke just because it's other idiots are smoking. I never thought of it. You know, so you're going to kill yourself for this other idiot. Yeah? Is that what you're going to do? Who? But the parent can't do that. Why? Because they're attached. They're like me, so why would they be smoking? I don't smoke. I value not smoking. Why are they smoking? And so they get angry. And anger, then it's not known for the most intellectual, analytical positioning. Does that make sense? That's why in the Vedas, mother, father, and teacher, these three are the authorities of the child. But this modern concept is only the mother because she's the only one with the kid, or only the father because he's the only one with the kid, or it's a mother and father, but in any of them, the teacher wouldn't know beings what they're talking about. It's non-native. It doesn't work. If anything works in the Western system, if you look at it, it goes back to a religious stand. Right? Being nice, being good, don't steal, where does that come from? That comes from religion. So anything you can say that does work is based on whatever is left of religion in the Western culture. That's all that's left. And as you remove that, then you see how bad it gets. There's no standards at all. Right? I mean, it's a big thing in governments now because they're secular, but they're trying to work out ways to support religion being introduced into the children's lives because technically they can't do it. But if they've noticed that since the religion has been very nicely taken out, then everything, the discipline in the country has gone down so badly. But they can't speak about it much because then it looks like they're pro-religion. So, but they do discuss it. Therefore, they put in religious studies. It's got to be everything, you know. Therefore, that's why we get invited to the school to give our presentation because we are a religion. So we're also there. But as we walk out, then the Christian guy comes in, or the Muslim, or somebody else comes in. It's the outside, right? Yeah. So, is this respect for others? Dharma means what's the inherent nature of something. So that functions irrespective of the particular ritual you apply. You know what I'm saying? Religion works. It doesn't matter what it is. You know. So you take anybody, a child in any culture. There's certain principles on which you deal, they respond. You don't properly deal, they don't respond. You know, any culture, the men, there's common principles. Women, there's common principles. Trying to uplift yourself, there's common principles. Taking up the faith in God, there's common principles. So that is religion. Whatever is the inherent nature of the thing. So understanding that, then you work according to it. That's what makes one broad-minded. Because you know this has a nature to act like that. So therefore it's there. So if everybody works according to the externals, then you can deepen your understanding. But if you can't, then it's a problem. Right? Means authority must tell others what to do. Others must follow authority. But at the same time, as authority must be seen as shelter. Right? So, if you actually understand the religion of authority, that means you have control, you say what happens, but you have to be a shelter. So if you only take control and not the shelter, you will fail as a leader. But if you take the both, you will be successful. Right? You take someone like we've mentioned before again, Napoleon. Okay, he was considered a very autocratic person. But one of the times before he actually moved up and took that position, There's one story that he was walking someplace and there was a bunch of laborers. And they were trying to do something, they weren't doing it right and couldn't get it done. And the supervisor was standing there yelling and screaming at him and telling him what a bunch of idiots they were. So then he looked at the supervisor and said, "What are you doing?" You know, says, "Why aren't you helping them?" He says, "I'm the supervisor, they're the laborers, I'm not supposed to do that." So then he got down there, got down whatever it was in the pit or whatever it is, helped the laborers, actually did what they did, but showed them how to do it right and got the thing done. Walked off. You know? Or you see the stories of, let's say, Alexander. They're in the desert. There's no water. There's nothing. He has all his legions. They bring, somehow or another, they get together one helmet of water. They bring that to him because he's the, you know, their leader. He takes it, throws it on the ground. He says, "My men don't drink water. I don't drink water." They talk about these people. Guarantee you in history, who's going to look back and say, you know, some of our people are, they were real leaders, or they were real parents, or, you know what I'm saying? It says, who's going to say these were real parents, or these were real leaders? Because if you don't know the religion, how can you be? Right? Octavian, right? He's the grandchild of, basically grandnephew of Caesar. Octavian's mother, this is 2,000 years later, whatever it is famous. She was a good mother. I'm just saying, she's known in the history books as she was not as a good mother. I mean, she really, you know, went out of her way. It was to the point where the Roman society considered her as something exemplary, as a mother.
Gandhari.
Yeah, Gandhari. But it's just, the points are there. So, she makes a point there, Gandhari, that you're the one that's supposed to control. She's telling Dhritarashtra, "Why didn't you do something about your nonsense son?" Right? The son's born, you come, you do the ritual, right? They come, they chant the mantras and this and that, and the umbilical cord is cut. Then the father gives the child back to the mother. So whatever he gives to the mother, she's going to get attached to. She's a woman. So that's her point. I'm a woman. You gave me the child, I'm going to be attached. So it's not me that's supposed to work this problem out. You're the one that's supposed to work it out. You shouldn't have given me the child. You should have put him out in the forest like the Brahmins told you. Right? So if you understand the nature of what you're dealing with, then there's so much less problem. Because you don't get disturbed. Right? The dog barks. You don't get disturbed because dogs bark. Or you train it how to bark, but in the right situations. So the whole thing is religion, as we define it, meaning the dharma, meaning the inherent nature of something that can't be changed. You understand that, then things work. That's what varnashram is, simply trying to teach you what is a human being and what is the relationship to other human beings and the cosmic manifestation. That's varnashram, in a nutshell. It's not economics, it's not that, that's all part of being a human being, right? Purusharthas are human necessities, dharma, artha, karma, moksha. So that dharma explains what is actually a human being. What do they need? How do they go about getting it? That's varnashram. You understand that, you will understand varnashram. You don't understand that, you'll never understand a million things. So dharma is the thing. Then all these things, then all these dualities are no problem because the duality changes from moment to moment. Right? Women can be very straightforward and down to earth and realistic about emotions to the point they can cut a guy's heart to shreds. Because they can say it as it is. But at the same time, they can't tolerate men not speaking in an emotional way. That's a contradiction. Right? And each one, other one has the other thing. These are the ones who catch them. Great, they don't. Women, when women talk to women, they're very straight about emotions. Men have the idealism about emotions. Women are very practical when it comes to emotions. When other things, men will be practical and women will be emotional. So it's always changing. That's the problem with this. If it was very clear it's left and it's right, people would have figured it out a long time ago. But it changes from moment to moment, situation to situation. That's why if you don't know the inherent nature, then how you understand at this moment what I'm dealing with. Right? So that's why then, because they don't understand what they're dealing with, therefore there's fighting and this and that. While in India, because your point was, in India seems to be the most tolerant of allowing varieties in culture and philosophy and everything, because they're working on the principle of dharma. What is the inherent nature? And the more it gets away from that, you see the more they fight. But the more you go back and they're not, then the more it works. I just explained it. You have to catch that. All I explained up to now was secular. Did I say anything about a particular religion? So the point is you got your answer, but you want it in certain words and terminology. I just explained your answer. That was a purely secular answer. It had nothing to do with Hare Krishnas or Hinduism or anything. It's as it is. Dogs bark because they're Hindu dogs. The Hare Krishna dogs that bark. Non-Hare Krishna dogs don't bark. Not very useful, yes. Make sure when you go to the pet store, get a Hare Krishna dog, because only they bark. The other ones don't bark. The point is people who understand nature are more tolerant because they actually understand what's going on. Right? Does that make sense? So, I think we'll end here. Jai Ho. Srila Prabhupada Ki. Yeah. Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki. Jai Nityananda Ki. Yeah.